Good morning at Mendocino. This is Jeff Blankford, welcoming you to the July 22nd edition of Takes on the World, a public affairs program that comes your way the second and fourth Wednesdays of every month, every other fifth Wednesday when I open the phones to you, our listeners. Even before the agreement with Iran had been signed in Vienna, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu made no secret of his intentions. He promised to do whatever he thought necessary, including the use of U.S. weapons, to derail any deal between Iran and the P5 nations plus Germany that would leave Tehran with any semblance of national sovereignty in two key areas, its ability to enrich fuel for its nuclear industry and to defend itself against a very real threat of U.S. or Israeli aggression. For the moment, however, he is placing his faith in the U.S. Congress and his legion of American supporters to do the job. Today, 20 minutes past the hour, I will be speaking once again about this subject with veteran investigative reporter and expert on Iran, Gareth Porter. Porter's back from Vienna, where he monitored the talks between Secretary of State John Kerry, his Iranian counterpart Mohammad Javad Zarif, and the foreign ministers of Britain, France, China, Russia, and Germany. Until then, I'm going to focus on important domestic aspects of the Iran issue that if passes prologue, you won't hear either on NPR or Democracy Now. What I'm talking about is an openly declared war on what most of the world considers to be President Obama's finest foreign policy achievement, one that the 15-0 vote by the UN Security Council on Monday confirmed. The war is being conducted by what one might call Netanyahu's overseas army. It is being led by AIPAC, Israel's official lobby, which has already spent $1.7 million tax-exempt dollars in an effort to wreck the agreement. Then comes its think tank spawn, the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, formerly called WINEP, now shortened to TWI, for times such as these. Having just celebrated its 30th birthday, it has been producing a daily barrage of thinly disguised Israeli propaganda missives, packaged as scholarly op-eds targeting the Iran sanctions. On June 24th, the Institute put out a position paper making certain demands upon the negotiators that has been treated by several journalists, most notably New York Times' Tom Friedman, as how it handed down to Moses on Mount Sinai. Signed by 20 academics, former high-ranking military officers, members of Congress, and former Foreign Service officials, its title was designed to impress, quote, "Public Statement on U.S. Policy Toward the Iran Nuclear Negotiations Endorsed by a Bipartisan Group of American Diplomats, Legislators, Policymakers, and Experts," end quote. Who are these experts? The overwhelming majority have close ties to Israel and no special expertise on foreign policy, such as former Senator Joe Lieberman and longtime House member Howard Berman, who once told a Jewish audience in the San Fernando Valley District that he had run for Congress first to serve Israel. Most notable among them is the ubiquitous Dennis Ross, who served as an advisor on the Israel-Palestine conflict through the past four administrations. Ross, in addition to his radio and TV appearances, has been issuing a steady stream of op-eds that have been grabbed up by newspapers across the country. All conclude, like WINEP's paper, with the demand that the administration be ready to use America's military might against Iran should that prove necessary. In this morning's New York Times, Tom Friedman endorsed that demand, writing, quote, that Congress should pass a resolution authorizing this and future presidents to do use force to prevent Iran from ever becoming a nuclear weapon state. Iran must know, he wrote, now that the U.S. president is authorized to destroy without warning or negotiation any attempt by Tehran to build a bomb, end quote. That's the same Tom Friedman who, after Netanyahu received 29 standing ovations from Congress in 2011, wrote that Congress had been bought and paid for by the Israeli lobby. Et tu, Tom? Well, besides the Washington Institute, there are other Israeli front groups, or Israel front groups, posing as think tanks that are hyperactive on this issue, such as the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, or FDD, and the Foreign Policy Initiative, the self-declared successor to that other Israel front group, the Project for New American Century. You probably never thought of PNAC as an Israel front group, but I assure you it was. Neocons William Crystal and Robert Kagan, both with strong affinities to Israel, founded both organizations. That their primary affinity for Israel is not hard to find if you do a computer search, but don't count on Israel-friendly media to help you out. You heard two pro-Israel mouthpieces, that same Dennis Ross, and the Foundation for Defense of Democracy's Mark Dubowitz on Weekend Edition Sunday and Morning Edition Monday, respectfully, questioning the soundness of the Iran agreement as if their opinions were unbiased. Ross did not mention to Weekend Edition host Rachel Martin that the previous week he had told a reporter for Israel's Haaretz that he would advise Washington to provide Israel with the B-52 bombers required to drop the type of bunker buster bombs needed to penetrate Iran's underground nuclear facilities. That, under the agreement, will be open for international inspections. Those B-52s, by the way, cost American taxpayers $2 million apiece. A major place in Netanyahu's army is being filled by his allies in the Senate and among the ever-ending field of Republican presidential candidates, all of whom are frantically whoring for some of Sheldon Adelson's millions. Then there are the traditional organizations, secular and religious, of the American Jewish establishment, which have been lobbying against any Iran deal from the beginning. Last but not least is Christians United for Israel, CUFI, whose director David Brogue, who is credited for building the organization, has just left it to direct a new organization funded by Sheldon Adelson and Democrat millionaire Haim Saban, targeting advocates of boycotting and divesting from Israel on America's college campuses. CUFI, with a membership of more than 2 million, recently announced that it will be forming a lobbying and tax-exempt organization, the CUFI Action Fund, that aims to do for Israel what the NRA does for the Second Amendment rights, as if that's needed. The operation will be headed by evangelical, heavyweight, and longtime pro-Israel advocate Gary Bauer. According to Bauer, it will have a multi-million dollar budget and a staff of a dozen to lobby Congress, run independent ads, support pro-Israel candidates, and target those who do not put support for the Jewish state at the top of their priority list. This is America, folks. Although Israel and the U.S. have had their public differences in the past, there is no historical precedent in the relations between the two countries or between any two countries for what's happening now. And I suspect it is making many Jews who are already troubled by Israel's radical move to the right more than a little worried. The only clash close to this came in 1981. Then senators were asked to choose between Reagan and Begin when it came to the sale of AWACS, airborne warning systems, to Saudi Arabia. Reagan, leading an Illinois Charles Percy to change his vote, prevailed 51-49, after which AIPAC successfully targeted Percy for, quote-unquote, betraying Israel. That deal was chump change politically compared to the Iran deal, and this time AIPAC has many more allies and much more money at its command. The Times of Israel agrees, writing, despite the vitriol of the 1981 fight, it still falls short of the battle shaping up in Washington today. The AWACS sale was, when push came to shove, a weapons transfer meant to solidify the U.S.-Saudi alliance. It did not hold the same status for the Reagan administration as the landmark Iran deal, which many see as a legacy project of the Obama administration. End quote. It also, I should add, did not hold the same status or importance for Begin administration that the Iran deal does for Netanyahu. We may get a hint as to what degree the Israeli prime minister has succeeded in rallying his overseas troops this afternoon. From 5:30 to 7 p.m. today, New York time, there will be a mass post-Stop Iran rally in Times Square that is being billed as the largest grassroots bipartisan American protest against the deal, granting Iran a fast track to a nuclear bomb, end quote. There is nothing, of course, grassroots or bipartisan about it. Heading the list of speakers will be James Woolsey, former director of the CIA and chairman of the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, mentioned earlier, that sprung up like a mushroom the day after 9/11. Since leaving the CIA, Woolsey has found a home on the boards of a number of Israel front organizations. Also on the bill is George Pataki, three-time governor of New York, who recently threw his hat in the ring for president. Robert Morgenthau, the legendary longtime Manhattan district attorney, and Harvard Law School professor Alan Dershowitz, who believes it is his job to defend Israel in the court of American public opinion, no matter how heinous its crime. Apart from an opportunity to demonstrate the extent of the New York's public opposition to the Iran deal, the main reason for the rally, according to organizer Jeffrey Weisenfeld, is to pressure New York's influential Democratic senior senator, Charles Schumer, who has thus far been known to publicly declare that he will vote against the deal. Of all the members of the Senate, Schumer's position on the Iran agreement is considered to be the most important. Not only is he Jewish, and proud to say, as you may have heard here on Takes on the World, that his last name means Defender of Israel, but he also is in line to replace the departing Harry Reid as a Democrat Senate leader after 2016. Washington is prepared to give Iran virtually all that it needs to get the bombs, says Weisenfeld's press statement. To release $150 billion to Iran will result in the expansion of worldwide terror. New York Senator Charles Schumer has the votes as presumptive leader to override this deal if he wants. To do anything less is cynical and disgraceful, and the public will not be fooled this time, Weisenfeld writes. Americans will not stand for another North Korea. If this deal is not stopped, charges Weisenfeld, New York voters will know whom to blame, end quote. Meaning, of course, Charles Schumer. The editorial board of Rupert Murdoch's New York Post, which is more hawkish than the Jerusalem Post, took the same tact in an editorial carrying the blunt Take No Prisoners headline. Schumer, where do you stand on the Iran deal? Quote. The Post on Tuesday, it began, presents New York Senator Charles Schumer with 10 questions about President Obama's Iran deal. We believe the senator has a moral duty to answer rapidly and in detail to clearly state his position on the agreement and whether he'll support it or work to defeat it. His constituents and his oath of office demand no less. Schumer is key as Congress debates whether to approve the deal, the Post editorial continued. If he backs the president, it will be virtually impossible to override Obama's promised veto, and the bargain will become U.S. law. The senator has said only that he intends to study the deal before he makes a comment. But in a letter 2 years ago, Schumer himself warned that any agreement must prevent Iran from ever developing a nuclear weapons capability, end quote. No one pretends this deal does anything like that, notes the Post editorial, failing to mention that preventing Iran from having nuclear capability, a vague term, was never an administration's position. In as rude and inquisitory style as can be imagined by a tabloid newspaper calling on a sitting U.S. senator to put the interest of a foreign country before those of the United States, the Post editorial board demanded to know what input Schumer had with Secretary of State Kerry and if the final product reflected his advice. It wanted to know if the senator's thoughts about lifting of non-nuclear sanctions on Iran is lifting a conventional weapons embargo against what the Post refers to as the rogue nation, and about Russia's plans to send S-300 missiles in just a few months, end quote. Those missiles, which are purely defensive and designed to protect Iran from an Israeli or U.S. attack, are not scheduled to be delivered until 2016, according to Bloomberg News. The Post then wanted to know if, by having the UN Security Council approve the deal as it did Monday, Obama hadn't broken his vow to give Congress the right to disapprove the agreement first, as if Congress, in Israel's pocket, no less than the Post editorial board, would do anything but reject it. Finally, there's Israel, said the editorial. Schumer, it reminded his readers, has spoken of the need to be guardians of America and its strongest ally, Israel. But Israeli opposition to this deal stretches across political lines. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's views are all well known, it goes on. But Itzhak Herzog, head of the left-wing Labor Party, is now headed to America to lobby against this dangerous agreement that poses clear risk to Israel's security. End quote. There's nothing left about Israel's Labor Party unless one compares it to Likud, which could best be described as ultra-racist. The Post editorial then suggests that Iran's going nuclear is all but guaranteed and worries about the millions of dollars that are properly Iran's that will be freed up to support Hezbollah and Hamas. By his own words, Schumer's opposition should be a no-brainer, says the editorial. But he's no longer just a senior senator from New York. He's been named as the next leader of the Senate's Democrats. That ambition is likely doomed if he leads an all-out fight against the deal. Yet, as we see it, the editorial says, America's best interest, and Israel's too, compels Schumer to put his conscience first, to work night and day to find the votes to override Obama's veto, and so at least give the next president the strongest possible hand to undo the damage. If not, the editorial goes on to say, Schumer will be betraying everything he stood for, end quote, except his country and his oath to the Constitution, I would add. Perhaps the senator sees it otherwise, says the Post. Sees reasons why he can vote aye or limit himself to a thundering speech against it on the Senate floor. Far too late to make a difference. If so, the New York Post editorial concludes, he owes the public an explanation now while there's still hope, end quote. With a daily circulation of over 500,000, the New York Post is the sixth largest newspaper in the country. Meanwhile, AIPAC has announced the creation of a new tax-exempt group to lobby against the Iran nuclear deal, as if another one was needed. Dubbed Citizens for Nuclear Free Iran, it plans to launch a $20 million media campaign to convince the American public that the deal is dangerous. It should not be confused with an older Israeli front group, United for Nuclear Iran, or UANI, which on June 28th announced that it was launching a multi-million dollar campaign to defeat the agreement. UANI was founded in 2008 by Ambassador Mark Wallace, the late Ambassador Richard Holbrooke, former CIA Director Jim Woolsey, the one who heads the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, and the ubiquitous Dennis Ross. UANI, while tax-exempt, acts as if it's a quasi-governmental organization, whether it's on behalf of Tel Aviv or Washington is a matter of opinion. Using information provided by Israel's agents in the U.S. Treasury, one former agent is now on its advisory board. It has made a name for itself by publicly going after foreign companies that Treasury has caught breaking or attempting to break the Iran sanctions. It is a large operation with a 32-person advisory board that includes a number of Israeli-friendly foreign ex-diplomats. What else they have in common, besides being fronts for Israel, is that former Senator Joe Lieberman sits on the advisory board of both groups. With five former Democratic senators comprising its advisory board, the new organization appears to be aimed primarily at Democratic districts, with AIPAC spokesman Patrick Dorton saying, Democrats should be especially concerned about the deal because it, quote, increases the chances of war, end quote. In what way does that? The New York Times blog that carried the story didn't say. It's apparent the group's goal is to get enough Democrats to join with Republicans to give Israel's prime minister a veto-proof majority in both houses of America's Congress. That's something to think about.